It is the Field of 68 Best Bets podcast and Best Bets live stream. My name is Rob Doster. The gentleman you see on the right of me today is the one and only Jeffrey Goodman. Jeff, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is over. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Is this the wildest first weekend that you can ever remember?
I mean, I guess you can say that only because, again, you know, you've got the most upsets by numbers that we've ever had. But it's not like we're overall surprised at this, are we, Rob? I mean, look at the current climate of college basketball going into this season. You add a pandemic. You and I both know, like, has anything shocked us other than if Baylor or Gonzaga were knocked off before the Sweet 16? If you had told me anything this season, would anything have surprised you that much?
Yes, the way that Illinois got beaten in the second round surprised me. I did not think that they were going to get their doors blown off by
anybody. Yes, but early in the season, you and I, we were both like, hey, do we completely trust Illinois? Like,
and then they turned it around. Like, yeah, it's easy to say early in the season, right? Yes, but then they had the second best player in the country, I would assume would go nuts. They had Andre Curbelo step up and turn into a star, and Kofi Coburn got better defensively. They made an adjustment. They played Jacob Grandison more. Like, they were the hottest team in the country heading into the tournament.
You trusted them? You trusted them?
I did not trust them. I had them going out to Oklahoma State in the Sweet 16, but I did not expect them. They were completely dominated. Like, that was that. Yeah. It's not that they lost, Jeff. It's that they were completely overwhelmed. That was really surprising to me.
Yes.
Oregon State coming out of nowhere to make it to the Sweet 16.
Yes.
That's
the most surprising. That might be the most surprising thing of the season.
Want to hear a crazy stat? On January 18th, they ranked 153rd on KenPom.
It's crazy. I mean, I was actually talking to Wayne Tinkle's agents last night, and I said to him, I'm like, honestly, like, think about Oregon State. You could have replaced Wayne Tinkle on January 18th and said, like, hey, you know what? It's just not working, if not for a big buyout. They still owed him a good amount of money. But you could have said, hey, we want to just see, like, what an assistant will do. It happens, not often, but imagine if that had happened. Like, it wasn't that far off.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy what they were able to do. Like,
that's, I'm happy. I really like Wayne Tinkle, so I'm happy. And plus, we might get to see Tinkle and Hinkle again. Tinkle and Hinkle.
It's never not funny. Maybe
it's really not. It's really.
I must be 6 years old. My sense of humor is going to hell. All right. So what was we'll just roll through stuff real quick. What was the biggest surprise for you from the first weekend of the tournament?
I think overall, if you told me that the Big Ten and the Big 12 would have a combined two teams left standing out of and the Pac-12 would have four. I mean, what are the odds of that? Seriously, like, the odds in Vegas of that would have been like a billion to one. Like it's insane. I mean, there's no way anybody could have ever projected that. You know, I'm a Pac-12 guy. Like, I went to Arizona. I stay up. I watch the Pac-12. You stay up. You watch the Pac-12. Like, it wasn't very good this year. It really wasn't. And, you know, UCLA's decent. But you know, they got
so
a little bit.
Here's my take on the Pac-12. We all expected this with Oregon. Like, Oregon's not a surprise.
Totally.
Everyone knew this was coming with Oregon. Yep. Oregon State, I'm willing to – that, like, that's just March happening, you know? Right. Shit happens in March.
Somewhat UCLA, too. Like, UCLA's obviously
– also, look at their road. They beat Michigan State, who was not very good all year, in a Big Ten that looks like it's pretty overrated.
Right.
They beat BYU. Who came out of the WCC a year after they lost, like, all of these pros. And the WCC, Abilene Christian. Like, their path was pretty easy. So, yes, they won those games, but it's not like they're out here knocking off a bunch of top 25 teams. So,
didn't Alford a couple years ago do, like, a Sweet 16 run?
He made two Sweet 16s.
Huh?
He made two Sweet 16s.
One of them was like this. It broke for him.
Yeah, like, it just sometimes the schedule works out for you well. The one that is really, really impressive to me is USC. And look, I'll tell you this. I said this last night on the stream, Jeff. There were three possessions last night that just kind of made me say, holy shit, USC is a problem. One of them was on the fourth three that Isaiah Mobley hit in the first half. Like he's out here 6 foot 10 hitting step back threes. Did you see that? He had a step back.
Yeah, no.
Second half, I think in the 3 minutes in, Evan Mobley grabs a defensive rebound, brings the ball up himself, right?
Yep.
Crosses over David McCormick, dribbles into a post up, gets a post touch, draws a help defender, kicks it out for a wide open three. Like you have your 7 foot center doing that?
Yep.
That's unfair. Yep. Two possessions after that, literally as I'm typing out the tweet saying, I can't believe Evan Mobley just did what he just did. Isaiah Mobley catches the ball on the 3-point line, pump fakes, two dribbles into the lane, past David McCormick, draws a help defender from the opposite wing, kicks it out to a shooter on the three, bang. If you have the Mobley brothers doing that, like that is a team that could legitimately play with Gonzaga. Like that team right there.
Yeah, Papa Mobley was a pretty good hire, I would say.
Yeah. Now, we'll see if that ends up lasting because that was probably as well as you're ever going to see the Mobleys play. And they're going up against a Kansas team that is banged up and coming off of COVID and just it felt like the wheels fell off for Kansas in that game. So we'll see what ends up happening. But, man, that was a warning shot last night. That was a warning shot.
Listen, there's no question. To me, when you watch USC, you think to yourself, and you know, when, the one thing I'll say, we've been critical to some degree, not more praise, obviously, of Evan Mobley because of his motor. Watching him in person, I'll say this, it comes so effortless. I think he's one of those guys, Rob. I think he doesn't show any emotion, unlike his brother. And just seeing him up close last night, it was the first time I'd seen him, obviously, in about 2 years. Because last time I'd seen him was in a high school event, and I felt like, man, I'd like to see him be a killer. He's gotten better that way. He's definitely gotten better. He's not a killer, but man, like
you're way more worried about that than I am.
Well, I just like to see him sometimes take over, show some emotion, but like he is, man, is he fun to watch? Like he's super talented, and I don't know if he'll be an NBA star, but he's got a chance to. Like, he's got a chance to be with some of the things he can do. And, like, he's one of those guys you just look at and you're like, all right, he's just scratching the surface. If he goes to the right team in the NBA.
But, yeah, like, the thing is, like, you want him to be a killer, but that's not – his value is not as a guy that's going to take over games as a scorer. He can completely dominate the paint defensively in a way that I haven't seen anyone do it at the college.
Why can't he?
He does it routinely. Go back and look at what, like, USC's two-point – percentage defenses. Like he is so good at guarding ball screens. He is so good at switching. He's so long. He's always in the right spot. They
got a chance. They definitely have a chance. Like they're not, you know, to me, again, if you look at a team that has the talent, has the experience, you know, they've got a lot of transfers on that team, but Oregon's really like that matchup might be the best matchup of the Sweet 16, Oregon USC.
It's not even the best matchup of the West region.
It's a good matchup. I'm
it's
saying.
It's good, but it's not. But Gonzaga, right, Creighton, so the West region, the same region.
The West region might have the two best matchups. How's that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right?
With that. All right.
I mean, look at it.
Those you don't think? Whoa. You don't think Oregon State Loyola is better than USC Oregon? What have you been drinking? What was in that bottle? Did you crack another Blue Moon? Did you have a Blue Moon for breakfast?
Florida State. You picked Michigan, Florida State, didn't you?
For the best game, Michigan Florida State is the best game. All right, so let's do biggest disappointment for you, and then we can get into talking a little bit about the Sweet 16 and looking forward.
I mean, I think the biggest disappointment, you got to say Illinois, don't you?
Illinois and Texas, if we're going to individual teams,
Texas is right there. Texas probably worse. You're right. Texas is worse, and Chaka. And that's one that, again, like you just look at Abilene Christian and you're like, how the hell did this happen? You don't do that with Illinois. You don't. I mean, honestly, Loyola's a really good team. Like Abilene Christian, I hate to say it, but like you just look at their talent and what Joe Golding put out there against Texas and you look at it and you're like in 20 years, Shaka's going to look back at that game and just say like, how the F did I let that happen?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, he should be saying it right now. The biggest, like, there were mistakes were made. Let's just put it like that. Like I did not understand why they constantly walked the ball up against a team that was pressuring them and made it very clear that they weren't able to function in the half court. Like, you had to find a way to get pace into that game. You had to find a way to be able to access the athleticism that they had on the roster.
Yep.
Just routinely dribbling the ball up when Matt Coleman was getting hounded and clearly not functioning well, and Courtney Ramey was getting hounded and not functioning well. It just didn't make sense. There were a lot of bad decisions that were made in that game. I'm sure Shaka regrets, and they were one defensive rebound away from surviving it and getting by. So Styles make fights. That was a tough matchup, and Texas did not play well. So I agree with you there. All right, let's I think what we're going to do here is we'll just roll through every game in the Sweet 16 and kind of break it down. I haven't really had a chance to take a deep dive into it, so we'll do this again later on. But I just wanted to go through the early lines before things really started to move too much.
Yeah, that's what I'd say we should do. I mean, I'm trying to think. Was there anything else yesterday? Before we do that, it was incredible to me. And
let's talk about Michigan, because Michigan, I think, is the big talking point. So they were down early to LSU, and they fought back, and they ended up winning. And it became very clear in the final about 8 minutes that, like, okay, Michigan is way better than this LSU team. So what how do you feel about Michigan? What's your take on them? And are they back? Like, are you still concerned? Like, what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's still LSU. Like when you get into it, it's still they beat LSU. And even without Isaiah Livers, you're saying to yourself, all right, like, LSU's undisciplined. They generally don't defend. Do you trust them? No. Like, I actually give them more credit. They fought with Michigan for most of the game and hung in there. But again, Michigan's – they're not the same team without – Livers. Can they beat Florida State? Sure. We both know Florida State's not great. You know, to me, it's going to be about if Florida State makes shots, they can – that should be a good game, like you said, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But, yeah, Michigan to me is again, if they can somehow get Livers back, which I haven't gotten any information that's going to happen.
They've done a good job keeping that quiet. I'll give them credit on that. They've done a good job.
I mean, maybe I got some time here these next few days. Maybe I'll try to dig in and find out what's going on there.
I honestly don't think I expect him to be back. I feel like
we
would have heard some good news if he was going to end up being back. So I don't expect him to be back. And that's not something with, like, I don't have inside information on that. Like, I'm not texting with Juwan Howard right now. So I don't think he'll be back. For me, though, watching them play, and I'm curious to see your take on this. I thought Brandon Johns played really, really, really important minutes for
him. Yeah.
And
they need that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's not going to be Livers, but he had a couple plays. Like, there was one play where he squared somebody up on the perimeter. He drove by him and he dunked it in the middle of the lane. Now, a lot of that had to do with the fact that LSU seemed completely adverse to actually playing any kind of help side defense. But and then in the second half, when Michigan made their surge, when they went, I think they went from like down 8 to up 5, and it felt like the span of about 6 possessions where they completely overwhelmed LSU defensively. Like, he made the two biggest defensive plays because he got put on an island against Javonte Smart, and then he got put on an island against Cam Thomas. And in both of those possessions, he stopped those guys. He was able to keep them from getting a shot off. They drove. He was able to go vertical at the rim and did not let them finish. And if he's able to do that defensively, then I do think that it changes the calculus a little bit on what Michigan is without him. Because that's the value of Livers, is that you can have the guy with some size but still be able to be on the floor because he can defend people on the perimeter. I didn't know if Brandon Johns had that in his bag. If he does have that in his bag, it does change things a little bit. Now, he's still not the shooter that Livers is, but being able to have someone to match up defensively.
Well, if Chandy Brown can make shots.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's made shots all year. Like, that definitely helps. Yeah. And I do think that a matchup with Alabama and a matchup with a potential matchup with Alabama and this matchup with Florida State are both really good for Franz Wagner sliding over to the four and playing bigger, because you're not going to have to worry about him really getting bullied. You know what I'm saying? Like, Florida State they have one big guy and they kind of play four perimeter players, right? Obviously, Alabama, like, they have Herb Jones basically is like their point guard. So, like, the matchups I don't think are going to result in And Franz getting played off the floor like they might have in other situations. So I think that that actually really helps them as well. So I'm kind of I'm back in on them. You know, I was worried, really worried about them without Livers, but I think that Juwan might have found something. And I'm also, to be honest, I cannot wait to see what he's going to try to figure out to do how to do to play this Florida State team. That's going to be a really tough matchup.
All right, let's anything else from yesterday stand out? Anything else? I thought it was kind of a ho-hum day, to be honest. Other than
yeah, I mean, it was we were due to have a ho-hum day. The Friday was insane, Saturday was crazier, and Sunday was nuts. And we were due to have like a day that was just kind of like, oh, well, you know what? Some days in basketball are just like normal things happen.
Well, it started off with Loyola, so you were like, whoa, all right, what's in? And then every game was like, I didn't see a close game all day. I saw four games, and they were all like,
yeah, you went to all the bad games.
Well,
right, let's talk about the Sweet 16 matchups and just kind of takes on early lines. I'm just going to go. So Bet Rivers right now has them listed in a specific order. I don't know if this is like the order that the games are actually going to be played or what, but we're just going to go through it this way. So first we have Oregon State and Loyola. Loyola is laying 6.5. The total there is 125. Do you see anything initially off the bat that you like?
Hang on one sec. Let me just pull all these lines up so I have them. Where are we here? Hold on.
Well, I'll go first on this. I think I really like Loyola Chicago in this spot because of what they can do defensively and the way that they can run people off the 3-point line. I think that you're playing with Oregon State right now. You're kind of playing with house money a little bit, and I'm expecting them to come back to earth. At this point, how can you go away from trusting what Loyola can do? If they were able to do that defensively against Illinois, like what are they going to be able to do against a team like Oregon State, who is as good as they've been? They are not anywhere near as good as Illinois.
No, not as good, but probably match up a little bit better in a way because of their versatility. I think they have guys, again, you know, the hardest thing we said this with Illinois was going to be Kofi and his matchup defensively, and that's what killed them ultimately. I think Oregon State can cover here. Like, I think Loyola Chicago wins, but I absolutely think Oregon State can cover. I'll take early on here, I would take the Beavers and the +6.5.
Yeah, I think the logic there is that, I mean, this total is 125, right? This is going to be a slow game. Both of these teams slow it down. They're both outside the top 300 in average possession length offensively. So it's going to be kind of like a slow paced possession by possession game. So I can see that. Next up, Arkansas.
Would you take the money line? Like, I think there's some value in the money line there too, +240.
I wouldn't take it. I just, Loyola seems like the kind of team that can completely envelop you defensively. And I don't know. I got to look more into it, but I'll put it like this. There's the early line there is not something that I'm necessarily interested in. I got to dive.
You know, is Tinkle playing in Hinkle? Do we know that or not?
I have no idea. I haven't seen it.
Might be, honestly, it could be fate. I mean, if Tinkle's playing in Hinkle,
could be. Is Oregon State the team of destiny now? Oregon State might be the team of destiny.
I think they might be.
All right. Next up, we have Arkansas laying 11 against Oral Roberts. Now, this is one of the lines that I jumped on already. I think Arkansas runs them out of the gym. I think this is the end of the road for Oral Roberts. I've loved their story. I want to see him keep going. But what they've been able to do in terms of creating mismatches and creating advantages, I don't think is going to happen against a team that, when they're at their best, is going to play five guards around the perimeter and is going to have Justin Smith to kind of erase Kevin O'Banner and I don't know. It feels like this is one of the worst possible matchups that Oral Roberts could have drawn. And I believe they've played already this season, right? So let me go back and double check.
Yes, they did.
I think that was the game when O'Banner went nuts and Max Asmus struggled, but I'm going to bring that up right now. So what do you think there? I love Arkansas in that spot.
I don't know if I love Arkansas. I mean, again, Oral Roberts, they get two studs. Now, the problem for Oral Roberts is if one of those guys has an off game, what happens, right? Like, they've both been on both of the games. They both had really good games. You know, Asmus and O'Banner, like, they're two studs. Arkansas has got a lot of dudes on that team. They got a lot of guys. And they are tough as shit. Like, we knew they were good this year, but again, we didn't think they played anybody early. So it's kind of part of the problem. But then we figured out, like, they actually did play some teams. They just played some good non-conference games that, like, I mean, again, they played North Texas early. They played Oral Roberts early. They played Abilene Christian early. Like, those three in the non-conference, they played, and they beat them all. But we were like, how good are any of those? You know, but obviously they turned out to be better than we thought. So I like Arkansas a lot here. I still say Oral Roberts covers. I don't think they win, but I think, again, when you get down to the Sweet 16 here, you're talking about these favorites that have a ton of pressure on them. Arkansas hasn't played with pressure all year, really, for the most part, all year.
I just think it's a really difficult matchup.
I mean, listen, the one area that's going to hurt these Cinderellas right now, usually at this point, like, the whole crowd is behind Oral Roberts. Well, there's no crowd now. Mm-hmm. There's no crowd. They're not going to have that. That is the part that worries me a little bit, because when you have a full packed arena cheering for you, they're not going to have really any of that. Like, it's going to be full of Arkansas fans. Arkansas fans are going to be the ones that buy the tickets for that game, and they're going to fill it up. Like, they'll have a small Oral Roberts contingent, but it's not. Yeah, I mean, that worries me. But I'm telling you, like, I think Oral Roberts covers in that one. But you're right; it worries me because they have two dudes, and if one of them has a bad game, they could get absolutely run out of the gym.
Yep. All right. Next up, we have Houston laying 6 against Syracuse. That total there is 140. What do you like?
I like the Cuse. I think they hang in there and cover and maybe win. I might take the money line. Like, it's like fate for the Bayhawks. Like, buddy's on. Like, seriously, you going to bet against the Bayhawks?
Syracuse Orange, team of destiny.
You can't bet against Jim and Buddy right now. You can't do it. Plus 200 on the money line.
Yeah. My worry there is that Houston is not as bad against the zone as I would have expected them to be. West Virginia is horrible against the zone. Houston is not nearly as bad. They do have some decent passers. They're not a great shooting team, but they're a good enough 3-point shooting team. And the big thing is they can just pound the offensive glass. And that's one spot that I'm worried about. Because with West Virginia, it was basically like Derek Culver, but you could kind of keep everyone else away. Like with Houston, everybody goes to the glass. So that's going to be the tough part about this matchup. But I would probably take Syracuse here. That's not a team that I'm in the mood to fade in March. So we're on the same page with that one. All right, Villanova, Baylor. Baylor's laying 6.5. That total is 139.
I love Baylor. I don't like Baylor. I love Baylor. Like, this is the one I got on already last night. Again, Baylor's guards against Villanova not having a big-time point guard right now. You know, without having Colin Gillespie. Like I just feel like this is the mismatch of and the other thing is, and not that it's that important, but Baylor beat Villanova a year ago in Myrtle Beach. All right, with similar players. Okay. Like, the core of these two teams, they play together. I was there. It was maybe the best game I saw all season. It was so well played, you know, offensively. Joe, I'm sorry, man. I know. But listen, the bottom line is your Wildcats did a hell of a job to get to this point, even if they lose to Baylor. They're playing with house money right now. You know that. I mean, without Colin Gillespie, listen, you can run stuff through Jeremiah Robinson Earl, and they will. And maybe J. Wright can pull off the improbable here. But I'm taking Baylor and their guards. Over Villanova, and again, I just think Baylor.
Here's the problem. Here's what's going to happen. Jay Wright's going to try to run things through Jeremiah Robinson Earl, right? Like he did against North Texas, and like he did against against Winthrop. And it's going to work for the first 5 minutes while Scott Drew has Flo Thamba and Everyday John on the floor. And then he's going to realize the best way to do this is to put Mark Vidal at the five, have Mark Vidal match up with Jeremiah Robinson Earl, because I think that he can take him away. Like, there's a lot of things that Jeremiah Robinson Earl can do well. Squaring up Mark Vidal 17 feet away from the basket and trying to make a play is not something that he's going to be able to do against them. And then have your four guards around the perimeter. Play Matthew Meyer for Jermaine Samuels to be able to match up there. You get a little bit of size on him. And then that's just going to take away everything that Villanova wants to do. I don't know what Villanova's option B is going to be in that situation when you don't have another point guard or a playmaker. So that's what I think is going to happen, is that Villanova will hang around for a while. They'll look good. Scott Drew will find the right matchup. And then it's just going to be like their offense is not going to be able to function. So I'm very, very worried about that matchup. With Colin Gillespie, it changes things. I think that it changes the conversation, but I think it's going to be a difficult. This is just the worst possible matchup for Villanova in this moment. Next up, Gonzaga laying 13.5 at Bet Rivers. The total is 158.5 there against Creighton. Jeff, do you have a good feel on that one?
Well, I'll take the points. I mean, listen, we know Gonzaga is probably the 1A or 1B out there, but I don't know. You thought they looked so good last night. I said
I didn't say they looked good. I said in a game where Oklahoma was playing out of their minds, where Austin Reeves was unbelievable, where Kerr Kuath had roughly 867 blocks at the rim, right? Yeah. Creighton or Gonzaga still covered. They still covered against Oklahoma, and I thought Oklahoma played like a top 5th percentile game for what they could have played. Yeah, and Gonzaga probably played like a mediocre game for what they could have played, and they won by 16. Like, there's at that point when you can just put it into cruise control against Oklahoma, beat four top 10 teams this year. They beat Alabama without Austin Reed.
How many of those teams did they beat with their second leading scorer and best guard?
They beat one of them without their leading scorer. They beat one of them without Austin Reeves and another important player.
Bottom line.
It's not like that team can't win without
important pieces. They were playing Gonzaga. Like to me, you just took away.
No, they were just playing Alabama, the SEC champion, another top five team and a top two seed. No, it was just Alabama. It wasn't Gonzaga. It was just Alabama.
And
they
beat them
without their leading scorer. Without the guy that averages 17-5-5.
You had to have him. You had to have them to have a shot. Like,
yeah, of course you had to have them to have a shot. And they still played their best game. And Gonzaga never got out of cruise control. And they won by 16 and covered. There was never a sweat. Like, there was never a point in time where we were like, oh, wow, I think Oklahoma might win this game.
No, agreed.
And then they got blown out. They got run out of the gym.
It shouldn't be. Brady Manek couldn't make a shot, and you're without your second best guard.
Okay, yeah. What's your point? Like, Austin Reeves was unbelievable. He hit every shot down the stretch. Yeah. Kurt Kuath took away probably 9 layups. That I don't know how much more you could ask for out of those two. And when you get those guys playing that way, and it was never close. And Gonzaga never took it out of cruise control. They covered.
Well, they covered. Yes, they
covered. So, like, I don't know what your I don't know what the concern is there. Gonzaga did not play well, and they covered.
Drew Timmy looked great to me. He carried him. I would say, here's what I would say is I like getting 13.5 from Creighton. They're old. They've got, obviously, I think in the rearview mirror is all the stuff that could have affected them and distracted them. At this point, I think they're pretty locked in. I worry about Timmy, obviously. I don't think they have anybody who can guard Drew Timmy, but I don't think most teams do. You know, the key for me is you could put Mahoney on Kispert and rotate other wings, potentially. That's the key. If you can keep Kispert from going off, they cover here. I'm not saying they win. They cover here. You can't let Kispert go for 25.
But the thing about Kispert is, like, if you put Mahoney on Kispert, I feel like you're wasting him a little bit, because all you need – you just need someone that's not going to leave Kispert. You can put anybody on that. You just stay connected.
You can't put anybody on that. That's bullshit. You can't put anybody on that.
Yeah, I think it's silly to waste your best defender. I would probably use Mahoney on
Ayayi?
No, well, I think I think I would use him if I was going to set the matchups. I would probably put, I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
You don't. You almost don't want to put Zegarowski on Suggs in a way, because then you wear him down potentially for the
offense. No, you would put Zegarowski on either Nembhard or Ayayi.
Right.
Probably Nembhard. Right. I would probably want to use Damian Jefferson on Ayayi, because Ayayi's a little bit of an offensive rebounder and Jefferson's a little bit stronger. I think I would put Mahoney on Jalen Suggs to start. Put some physicality on him, an athlete that can defend him, and let Mitch Ballack run around after Corey Kispert. Like, you can face guard Corey Kispert and not let him get a catch off and not leave him and basically play a 4-on-4 everywhere else if you really want to take him away. But it feels like putting your best perimeter defender on a team that has three guys that can play off the bounce on the guy that can shoot is just – I don't think that's the way that you do it. At least that's not the way that I would do it. But, again, you're right. The biggest issue that I have – is I don't know how you have to have Christian Bishop on the floor, and I don't know how Christian Bishop deals with Drew Timmy. That seems like really suboptimal.
So weird to say, Drew Timmy is such a matchup nightmare. I mean, he was so dominant against Oklahoma. Like, now we knew he would be against their front line, right? For the most part, mm-hmm. He's such an X factor for them, and just something nobody else has. So, yeah, I'm taking Creighton in 13.5. I like that.
I think that's the side that you need to be on, but I don't know. I'm probably not going to bet. If that line doesn't move anywhere, I'm probably not going to bet it, because I don't want to be on the other side of Gonzaga at any point. All right, next up, we have Florida State and Michigan. Michigan is laying 3.5. The total there is 145. What do you like here, Jeffrey?
The Michigan Wolverines. I do. I like them giving 3.5. I've never bought into Florida State being this great team this year. Like we talked about, Livers is super important. I don't think he comes back. But they've got other pieces. They've got other pieces that have clearly been able to step up. And I think their potential between Dickerson, between Hunter, between Mike Smith's been good. Like, The only thing I worry about, but they keep winning without him being great, is Wagner doesn't play great and they still find a way. And I just say it over and over and over. And like, Florida State is the matchup I worry about with him probably more than any, because they're so big, strong, and physical. But I think Michigan wins this game. Could it come down to a final shot and Florida State covers? Absolutely. I could see this being a grinded out type game. That comes down to the end. Maybe not grind it out like defensive. It's not going to be one of those. But I think it could come down to the final shot. But I'll take Michigan laying 3.5 here.
Yeah, it's tough. I got to think about this one more, because I'm going to be really worried about Mike Smith going up against the length and athleticism of Florida State. Right. And their ability to switch. Like, so I have two concerns. One is Mike Smith is a small guard going up against a team that can play Scotty Barnes, 6'7" at the point. The last time we saw Florida State go up against a small guard was when he completely erased Kihei Clark against Virginia. Now Virginia and Michigan are two very, very different teams and very different levels, but that's still something where it's like that size is going to be something that you need to be concerned about. The other problem is Florida State switching takes you out of anything you want to run offensively. And I do kind of think that Michigan, when they are at their best, like they're winning because of what they can run offensively, as opposed to being able to win one-on-one. Yeah. So that's something that is definitely a concern to me. I got to think about it more and try to figure out what Juwan might actually do. But yeah, I think that line seems about right to me. Next up, USC Oregon at Bet Rivers right now. It's USC -1. You got a little bit of extra juice. That's -109, and the total is 139. Jeff, how do you feel about this one?
I don't know on this one. Like, my gut tells me, and I think I'm going to do it, my gut tells me go with Dana Altman in Oregon, but I don't feel good about it after watching USC last night. I mean, they beat Kansas by like 100. Like,
USC jumped up to number 6 in KenPom right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me. I mean, it's crazy, but, you know, Oregon, I love their switchable parts, right? I love their wings, and I think Will Richardson's playing well. Like, Duarte, like, they've got all that. But, like, what do you do with Mobley? Like, what do you do with both Mobleys? That length, man, is something that Oregon's not going to be able to combat. So they're going to have to spread out USC. And I still think, like, those guys move their feet well. Both Mobleys can guard. And, again, around the rim, I think some of these Oregon guys are going to have trouble finishing around the rim.
Yeah, I think the big concern that I have is that I don't think that they're going to be able to really do anything in the half court. Like, I just think that the way that USC's length and perimeter ability matches up with Oregon can really take away the things they do want to do in the half court. So I think Oregon's going to have to make this be like kind of a up and down transition based game. I think that they're going to have to throw that press on and try to start forcing some turnovers, because I do think that USC's ball handlers can be a little bit turnover prone. But I don't know if that happens. We'll see how that one ends up playing out. But my initial take is that I want to be on USC in this spot. It just does not feel like that is laying one does not feel like enough.
Be careful back right. Against St. Altman.
Yep. Last one we had. Yeah. Well, I mean, we said the same thing about Bill Self and Andy Enfield, and Bill Self lost by 34.
He did. You're right. But I think Oregon's got more talent, honestly. Which is crazy. Yep.
All right. Last line is Alabama -6 against UCLA. Do you like that one?
I just got Alabama 5.5. And yeah, I like the Crimson Tide here a lot. Like, my top three right now out of the gates in this are Baylor, Creighton, and Alabama. I Alabama always worries me a little bit, but not at this point. Like, at this point, I don't worry about them as much, you know, getting up for it. Like, Petty played well yesterday, which I thought was huge. Shackelford is very underrated. I don't know. I just don't think in an up-tempo game, I just don't think, and I think they'll make it. They'll play fast. They'll find a way to control the tempo. They've got bigger guards against Tiger Campbell. I think Tiger Campbell's going to have trouble. Like, that's my biggest thing, is Tiger Campbell against smaller guards is fine. Against the length and athleticism, I don't know how much you've seen that in the Pac-12. I don't know how many teams have seen that, period.
And you know who's back? You know who's back?
Primo.
Who's back for Alabama?
Primo.
Jelly Fam JQ, baby.
Oh, jeez.
Jelly Fam Javon's back.
There we go. Yeah, he looked great. He looked great. I'm so happy for him.
I think that Alabama's the side that I want to be on here, but honestly, like, this is one of the ones where it's like I got to dig in a little bit more. I don't think there's nothing about the early line that I think we need to jump on, because it's going to move too much. So the only one that I have locked in so far is Baylor -6.5. Everything else is I'm going to kind of wait. I'm probably going to put a bet in on USC pretty soon.
Before we run, two things. Look at futures right now. Like, anybody else, is there anybody other than Gonzaga or Baylor that you feel comfortable? You know, Gonzaga's +155, Baylor's +300 to win it all. Is there anybody else that you could see? Like, for me, it might be Alabama. I might go Alabama +1100. Like,
well, I already have an Alabama future locked in. Yep. from a while back. But no, there's no one else. Like I said, I think that Gonzaga wins every game by double digits. So if anything, I would jump on Gonzaga again.
I probably jump on Baylor, and I probably should.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at them, before the tournament started, but so yeah, I think Baylor is the only other one.
Most outstanding player.
There are Final Four futures that are available right now. You can get Houston at +100 to get to the Final Four, which is pretty interesting. You can get USC to the Final Four at +350 is pretty interesting. But that's really all of what I'm looking at this point. And then there's Player of the Year or Most Outstanding Player futures.
Not Player of the Year, most outstanding player in the tournament.
Yeah. Corey Kispert +450. Jared Butler +600. Drew Timmy +600. Jalen Suggs +800. For me, the real interesting one is probably Davion Mitchell at plus 1500. Right. Because he's awesome. He can take over a game defensively. And I think if Baylor is going to beat Gonzaga in the title game, which is what will need to happen for him to be able to win it.
Yeah.
Then I think it's going to be because he completely takes away Jalen Suggs.
Yeah, so, I agree. I think it's like defensively would earn him most outstanding player. Like, you know, Jared Butler could go off for 25. Davion Mitchell has 16, but he shuts down Suggs, and that's why you give it to him. So I'm with you. I really like that at plus 1500.
You know what the best long shot is? Best long shot player the MOP future is?
Buddy Bam.
Evan Mobley plus 3000. Because USC is the team that can is a team that can beat Gonzaga, and if they beat Gonzaga and they win the title, Evan Mobley is going to win the most outstanding player award.
Yeah.
So I think you actually get better value betting Evan Mobley as most outstanding player than you would at USC winning the national title, and I think that's where the money really lies, is by betting on Evan Mobley as the most outstanding player. So that's if you think that USC is going to get it done, then I think that's where you should invest your money.
I'm investing my money on Davion Mitchell.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense.
As always, we got two weeks from tonight. No, 2 weeks from today. I'm going home. 2 weeks from last night. We'll have an actual title. We will do, the final.
We're gonna get some people on this week. We'll grind it out. We'll have some fun this week.